and welcome to the Grant Street Experience. I'm your host, Grant Urban. Welcome to the Grant Street Experience, everyone. Got a great lineup today, kind of an innovative show that we're test driving here today. This is our first episode of Car Talk Pittsburgh Style. I got my co-host with me, co-pilot Rebecca Kiernan. Rebecca, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
How are you today?
Great.
And our special guest, Brandon Walton, fleet manager extraordinaire for the city of Pittsburgh. Brandon, how are you doing today?
Good. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well, man. That is some fabulous art behind you.
Thanks. My wife took it out. Not sure where she got it, bro.
Oh. I didn't know if you dabbled on the side with, you know, some artistic talents as well.
No, that's her. She's the interior designer.
We'll tell her she has great taste. That's pretty cool stuff.
We'll do. Thanks.
So, first off, welcome to the Grant Street Experience. This is first time on here. We really appreciate you joining us today. Maybe for the listeners, if you could start out by just telling us a little bit about your background and history and how you came to work at the city of Pittsburgh.
Sure. So I've been in fleet for about 15 years now. I started off with the Pennsylvania Army National Guard as a mechanic. Worked my way up to sort of like a service advisor, but in the Guard full-time. So National Guard is traditionally like a reserve, you know, 1 week in a month, 2 weeks out of the summer. I did it full-time for 8 years. Worked my way up to service advisor. Then I'm basically like a service manager / fleet transportation specialist. Everything you can do with fleet kind of falls under my belt. I'm now back to part-time. So from the Guard, I went to Norfolk Southern Railroad as a transportation supervisor. And now here I am at the city. I love my job here. It's interesting. I meet a lot of great people like yourself and Rebecca. I get to work with some good teams, and it's exciting.
Awesome. Maybe for folks, a lot of times when I talk about the work that we do with you guys in fleet, folks are a little surprised that we have such a massive fleet and don't really appreciate, I think, all of the, all the mechanized equipment that goes into kind of operating a government the size of the city. Can you give folks kind of a sense of, you know, both the scale of the fleet and, you know, the types of vehicles that are under your management?
Yeah. So, for a city fleet, you know, we are, I'd say we're a little smaller than maybe we could be. We have a lot of operations out there in terms of, you know, taking care of the parks that we use, providing fire and EMS and police service to the city. We could sometimes use more vehicles to kind of help out, but, we make do with what we have, and we have a lot of cool, interesting, different types of vehicles. I thought the military had a lot of cool, interesting vehicles until I came to the city and seen some of the specialty items we have. Really cool. And we're looking forward to moving forward with, the alternative fuels and electric vehicles and stuff like that.
Awesome. What's some of that specialized equipment that you're talking about?
So we have this really cool trailer that has a tower that you can pull the trailer and then you can stop and you lift the trailer up, and it has like this watchtower where, you know, we can kind of see everything that's going on. We have another trailer that's like a mobile stage. So, you know, if we wanted to have a big press briefing, we could, you know, pull our mobile stage out to a park somewhere and the mayor could get up on stage, and, you know, that's all pretty cool. Even all the way down to our fire trucks that are specially built for, the different types of areas, the height of the buildings, mm-hmm. and the amount of pressure that we have to use in our pumps to make sure we can reach the higher areas. Just really cool, you know.
Really? Go ahead, Rebecca, sorry.
You cover boats and horses too?
Yeah. So, you wouldn't think that horses were part of fleet. But they are. And I mean, I don't really do much in terms of, I don't handle any of the taking care of them or anything like that, but when it's time to purchase a horse or buy something for the horses, say the horse trailers or a truck to pull the trailers, or you know, even down to a side by side to help at the stadium or stables. Yeah, that falls under fleet.
where are the horses stabled?
They are near Riverview Park. I can't remember the name of the street, but just below the first division there.
Wow. How many horses do we have?
I think we are at 10.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it's a public safety function, right? That's the primary purpose?
Yes. So they're all they're police horses. We have a mounted police unit. Those officers are assigned directly to the horses. They take care of them. They, I'm sure everybody's seen them walking downtown. They are magnificent creatures. They're huge. They're big horses. They remind me of the Clydesdales from the Budweiser commercials.
That's pretty awesome. And then you were saying boats too?
Yeah, boats. Actually, we just got a new river rescue boat. It was much needed. The old river rescue boat was 20 plus years old. So the new one's really nice. I haven't gotten to take a ride on it yet due to the pandemic. It came just before the pandemic. But it is out on the water. They are using it. I think it was part of some things that were going on not too long ago. I think they were using it. We also have a really cool fire boat. That's another piece of specialty equipment that's really interesting. It has the ability to suck water out of the river and shoot it at a fire, you know, so a bridge is on fire or, you know, maybe somewhere near the river where we can't get a fire truck to, we can take the boat right there and suck the water up and put the fire out. And it also has the ability to hook up to a fire truck. So we, you know, we can bring a pumper down, and if we don't have a fire hydrant nearby, we can run a hose to the boat, and the boat can suck water out of the river and push it to the truck, and then the truck could then pump it onto the fire.
Amazing.
Yeah, I did get to ride that boat. That boat is really awesome.
Now, are these like super high performance boats? Like,
they are fairly high performance. I wouldn't say that you would want to take them out to race another boat, but they got some good horsepower. They can move.
They move. And this is the River Rescue is the one down by PNC Park, right?
Yes. Yeah. And it's got some pretty cool, you know, thermal imaging and stuff like that, you know, to help see below water and see long range, you know, if we're kind of covering an event like, you know, presidents in town or something like that, you know, it's got some pretty cool equipment on it. And it also has the ability that we can put like a side by side up on it. So we can bring it up to the dock, and it has a bridge that comes down, and you can drive a quad up on it, has some space and take it if you need to use that somewhere. Plenty of room for equipment and dive gear, stuff like that.
Pretty neat.
Yeah.
That was also highlighted in, what was the movie, Striking Distance, I think?
With
Van Damme, was that, or no, Bruce Willis.
Wait. Are we thinking of two different movies? There was one with Van Damme that was like based around the Civic Arena. And then there was one with Bruce Willis where he was like, you know, he was a police officer, river rescue, all that kind of stuff.
I think it was the Bruce Willis one. I think we might have to phone a friend on that to get a
yeah.
I'm not that friend.
You're not that friend.
Great movies. They've made some great movies in the city of Pittsburgh. And sometimes our fleet gets to be front and center. Which is
really, I know, that's what's awesome about it. They're really kind of the, not just functional, but they're showpieces too, I think.
Yeah. And you know, what's great is our the whole city, especially public safety, but the whole city, they really take pride in the way the vehicles look in terms of graphics, the design of the outside of the vehicles.
Now, what goes into that in terms of like the detailing them? I know it's like once we buy a vehicle, you know, it's kind of an open palette, but we have to special logos and details and things like that. How does that process work?
Yeah. So, you know, it's a partnership between, you know, fleet and the individual department and the mayor's office. just working together to try to come up with a good design that fits, you know, both the contour lines of the vehicle, but also like the heart of the city. You know, it our decals aren't just, you know, a picture for people to see. They represent something, you know. So with the police vehicles, it could be, you know, the badge or the colors, the black and yellow that are traditional to the city. This year, we got some really cool things coming out vehicle-wise. I won't speak to them too much. We'll see them very soon. We've kind of kept it under wraps, but we did have a meeting with the mayor 2 weeks ago to show him the final design on the police car. He's pretty excited, as well as most of us are. It does incorporate some really cool things. I mean, we're transitioning to the all silver fleet, but this vehicle pays homage to the silver fleet, the wishes of the mayor, and bringing the city to, you know, a single design. You know, everybody kind of has their own thing, but you can tell that all the vehicles are City of Pittsburgh. There's no, like, you know, Domi doesn't have three different decals or whatever. But then also the police cars also pay homage to their uniform. And I think everybody will see that once the cars come out. So it's really cool. We're currently working on the design for the ambulance. I'm hoping to have some preliminary pictures of that early next week. And then we'll move right into designing the EMS motorcycles. We have some brand new EMS motorcycles and police motorcycles coming out. So we're working pretty hard, and I think everybody's gonna be excited when they start to see some of these new vehicles in the silver color.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool to hear. Rebecca, you and Brandon have been doing a lot of hard work on the topic of vehicle electrification. Maybe for listeners, if you can kind of frame that out a little bit in terms of how we've started to dive into the world of electric vehicles and kind of what we have in the fleet now and some of the trials and tribulations that you guys have been going through.
Sure. So I can start off, but Brandon's going to have to fill in. But we,
you guys are like click and clack. So like, this is the,
we make a good team. We have served on quite a few projects together. And, I think Rebecca and I make a pretty good team when it comes to this EV infrastructure and all these projects that keep getting thrown on our plates, you know.
The real click and clack. The real click and clack might, like, you know, start having you guys as like a guest on their show. So
maybe.
I can't answer any questions about the strange rattling coming from the back of your 1992 Volvo, though. okay, so electric vehicles in what, like 2015? I think we set a target of 100% fossil fuel-free fleet, which is a little bit complicated. But so we've been trying to right-size the fleet and figure out exactly which vehicles would shift to which fuel type. So electric vehicles were kind of the lowest hanging fruit for our PLI fleet. So we've been working to switch those over. They're sedans, so they had formerly, or, you know, there still are some, been Ford Focuses. So we've switched those over. The first two that we got were Ford Focus Electric. Ford then moved their production of Focuses over to China, so we stopped purchasing those, and then started going with the Chevy Bolt. So we have 24, Brandon, in the fleet right now?
So technically, we do have 24. Eight of them are not in service yet because we just received them due to working on the decals and the infrastructure. We're not ready to put them in service, but soon.
So we've had, we've been driving around electric vehicles for like the past 3 years. We've been supplementing the extra cost with some Department of Environmental Protection grants, which have been super helpful. And then one of the challenges that we've had, obviously, is charging the vehicles. So where do they sleep? How do we lay the electrical infrastructure, which is something that we're going through right now. The first ones were parked at our motor pool lot, and those are grid-tied level 2 chargers. Level 2 means that they take about 8 hours overnight to charge to full capacity, typically. And then we subsequently purchased with Slim Forsyth when he was here, those solar electric self-contained chargers that you might see at the Second Avenue lot. Mm-hmm. So those are not grid tied, which means they're kind of standalone, and then they charge the vehicles from solar energy, which is great. But in the summer, we need to supplement those because we're in Pittsburgh and it's cloudy. In the winter, I'm sorry. I can't get past how hot it is in itself. So right now, I mean, we're working on the Second Avenue lot. So that's the lot that's in between Second Avenue and 376, right next to the Allegheny County Jail. And we're working on a grid-tied solution there that will eventually, hopefully, have a big solar canopy and more of a permanent solution at that site. But we're running into some complications. It's hard to run that much electricity to a site that hasn't in the past seen any energy use. Mm-hmm. So just, running electric and wiring and conduit all the way to, an empty parking lot has, it's been a learning experience.
Definitely. Take a step back. I mean, can you guys talk about for folks that haven't, I'm sure there's a lot out there, but haven't experienced driving an electric vehicle. What's kind of the first time behind the wheel of an electric vehicle like?
Sure. I mean, I'd say the first thing you note when you get an electric vehicle, when you hit the start button, nothing seems to happen that you're expecting. You expect like the turn of the key and the rumble of the engine or the vibration of the engine, at least. Nothing with an electric vehicle. Some of them do like a ding to let you know that it's good to go. Some of them, the dash lights up a little bit brighter. But other than that's it. So you hear nothing. And then when you start to go, it's instant. It's not like there's zero hesitation, which is really cool. Foot the pedal and wheels move, not, foot the pedal, engine revs, and then the car starts to move.
There's no RPMs, right?
So there are the yes and no. I mean, there's still rotations per minute in terms of the wheels moving, but yeah, there's no transmission. So that's where you get the delay versus a gas vehicle. Traditional combustion engines, there's engine, torque converter, transmission, and then there may be drive shafts and axles and wheels. Whereas the electric vehicles are really pushing towards these motors that are like built into the individual wheel. So I always use the comparison of like your remote control car when you were a kid.
Yeah.
It's right there. All the power's right there at the wheels, and it just goes. And the coolest thing about electric vehicles versus, combustion engine vehicles, other than the fact that they're clean and green and they're like those remote control cars in the sense that 20 years from now, if we put a new battery in it, it will probably still drive down the road. Whereas with a combustion engine, 20 years down the road, it may need a lot of different items to get it running again. So less moving parts, less maintenance. They're really cool. And, they save you on brakes, and I mean, they're just really interesting.
What you guys have had the chance to, and as we've explored, the different types of vehicles, you've also had a chance to test drive a lot of these. Is there a difference in experience between, say, the Ford Focus, the Chevy Bolt, the Tesla? Like what are some of the different, both technical, but also like the experience in driving some of those, are there differences?
So I haven't actually drove a Focus, so I'm not sure how those are. I've driven the hybrid Fords, but not the EV Focuses. Now the Chevy Bolt versus the Tesla, really similar in terms of that instant torque, foot the pedal and go. So biggest difference is, I mean, Tesla was built as a luxury vehicle. Performance is key with them. So you definitely feel that. Tesla is a cool car to drive. I'd love to own one. A little out of my price range for the Model S, which is what I want. The Model 3 is really affordable. I'd love to get some for the city.
The 3 is like the entry Tesla, right?
Yeah, they're entry level. They're right around 36,000, 35, 36,000 for the base model, which, you know, as a fleet, we always buy the base model. That's what's economical. We don't need any bells and whistles, leather interior, and all the extra stuff that's added to vehicles.
And that price is pretty similar to a lot of the other vehicles that we buy, right? Like that price point.
Yeah, the Chevy Bolt is actually MSRP is right around 36. We did competitively bid the vehicles out this year. The Chevy Bolt came in at the lowest between the Bolt, the Leaf, and the Tesla. Biggest thing is Tesla is just not set up yet with a lot of the cooperative purchasing agreements that we tend to use. So there's no like government discounts yet. They don't have that kind of power yet, or maybe just not the ability to cut discounts like some of the bigger automotive makers are.
So they're not on like a CoStars or Sourcewell or things like the government buying platforms that we
No, and I think, you know, they seemed like they were interested in joining, but maybe, you know, I guess Tesla as a whole, you know, corporate Tesla would have to agree, because one of the biggest things with some of those cooperative purchasing agreements is that they have to offer a standard discount right up front. And, you know, I think Tesla's just not there yet that they can start doing that. Maybe eventually.
What about you, Rebecca? What's your experience been?
Driving them?
Yeah.
Well, the city planning vehicle is a Focus. So I've mostly been driving around in the city planning Ford Focus, which is actually really fun to drive. I was a former owner of a old gas Ford Focus, so driving them both at the same time was—I mean, not at the same time, but in the same period was different. Yeah, they just zip around. They're really fast. They have a quick pickup. But Brandon, you should talk about the time we got to test drive the electric semi truck, because I have no comparison of a regular semi truck.
Yeah. Set a little context for this, though. I think this is important.
Yeah. So, you know, we want to transition whatever we can to, you know, a cleaner fleet. So we got approached by this company, Lion Electric, and they came with some really interesting. You know, they have been. I think it's 8 years they've been selling an electric school bus, and now they want to dabble in, you know, class 6, class 8 trucks. So, you know, box trucks, garbage trucks, things like that. You know, our garbage trucks are class 8 vehicles, and that's the weight, you know, that they can handle. So, you know, we decide we're going to make a trip to Montreal. They invited us up to come to their factory and check out the vehicles. And we're thinking of doing a forestry truck. Unfortunately, we lost a forestry bucket truck last year. Some bad wiring. I don't know if one of our garage rats got to it, but it caught on fire. So nobody was hurt, but we lost the vehicle. So we need to replace it. So we said, well, let's go electric if we can. So we went and looked at this thing. And let me tell you, I've driven, you know, monster military trucks, and they just don't compare. I mean, this just like the Tesla and the Chevy Bolt, when you put your foot to the pedal in this electric vehicle, it goes. It just picks up and it goes. And I mean, it's amazing. The motor on this thing, you know, when you think of a class 8 vehicle and the size of the motor, you know, it's like the size of a small car, you know.
Right.
You could lay the motor of a class 8 vehicle on a Ford Focus, and it would completely smash it. The motor in this class 8 truck looked like a large briefcase sitting on a desk. I mean, it was just so
small
in comparison. Yes, and then there's no transmission, so you got this box with a drive shaft coming out of it and a bunch of electrical cables going to it, and that's it. And that's what moves this Class 8 vehicle? So we told them, you know, we needed 26,000-pound GVW, and we needed to be able to tow about 10,000 pounds.
What is GVW for folks?
Gross vehicle weight rating.
Okay.
So that's kind of how you get your different classes of vehicle, whether you need a CDL to drive it and whatnot. That's kind of the standard measurement.
Okay.
So the 26,000 pound would be like a Class B CDL. So we need the 26,000 pound GVW, and then we need the ability to haul at least a 10,000 pound trailer. So we gave them all those specs, and we're waiting to hear back. I think the pandemic has slowed it down a little bit. I've talked to them a couple of times. The engineers are definitely, they know they're capable of making it. The company that's going to build the bucket side of it, they're sure that they can make it work. So now it's just a matter of them, you know, finding out the details and getting us a price. So we're excited. We're hoping that we're going to make this work. It'll be the first of its kind, and it'll be in the city of Pittsburgh.
So for them, for they're making this leap from school buses into, you know, long hauling or short hauling types of
short hauling Class 8 chassis. So garbage trucks, bucket trucks, box trucks, you know, okay. those types of vehicles, mostly single rear axle. So, if you're looking at like a larger truck and you look at the back, it's got, you know, one wheel back there. So just like a car so they're mostly looking at that, which would be a single rear axle. They are capable. They do have the capability to make it a dual rear axle. So you'd see two wheels back there on each side. And that all that really does is add to the gross vehicle weight rating, the vehicle's ability to have more weight on its axles.
Wow, that's impressive.
What's so smart about them too is like their design was like made to just be as functional as possible for the users. So yeah. They're showing us like, you know, they put garbage bins in the school buses because like the school bus driver needed a garbage can. Otherwise they're always hanging those, you know, garbage, like they were just really smart about stuff like that. But what was so impressive was when we think about like converting over our bus fleet, you know, the county bus fleet, it's always like, how are we going to charge this thing? They mm-hmm. have two ports for batteries so that you can just charge up on a level two charger overnight, like you would any other fleet vehicle, you know, like sedan vehicle. So they just made it super user friendly so that you don't have to install any additional infrastructure to handle a large truck like that. You could just do it on regular level two, pull up anywhere and fill it up.
So it's kind of plug and play then.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Rebecca's right. They are so innovative
in
their thinking. I mean, they, you know, I think the coolest thing, other than them having these large electric vehicles, the coolest thing I remember seeing, like Rebecca said, the garbage can idea of putting a garbage can in every school bus. You know, we always hear these stories about, you know, these kids who fall asleep on the bus and they end up back at the bus depot. This company created just a switch that's in the back of the bus that the driver has to walk to the back of the bus and flip the switch, or else when he gets off the bus, an alarm will go off and the bus won't shut off. It won't stop with the alarm until he walks to the back and switches the switch. And that alone, that simple thing, you know, mitigates the problem of these kids being left on a bus. This company, they think of everything.
So many kids are going to miss camping trips and bus garages.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many fellow parents I've had that have had that happen.
It's always my biggest fear with my kids.
Oh, all the time. Every time they get on the bus, I'm like, don't fall asleep.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. My younger son, he is dead tired when he gets home from school. So it's like, I hope he doesn't fall asleep on the bus.
You kiss them on the head when they get on and you say, don't fall asleep in the afternoon. Like,
yeah.
Rebecca, you touched a little bit on this, but you just picked up again the infrastructure challenge, like the transition to electric vehicles. It's one thing about designing like a really cool vehicle, but it's also another thing about having the infrastructure there to support it. What are some of the things that are needed to help facilitate that transition?
Well, it requires a lot of partnership with like the utility companies, so Duquesne Light. I think one of the biggest challenges that we have is like there's no maps or diagrams about which of our facilities have which type of service or require upgrades in order to add anything there. So every single time we're looking to site a piece of charging infrastructure at one of our facilities, it's like the same process over and over again. There's just no like streamlined way to go about it. Like you have to have a meeting at the site, we have to assess it, you have to call an electrician, but having some kind of like a map or analysis of what exists where would be helpful so we could at least start to prioritize where we're going to site stuff. Especially in some of those, like parking lots are a great place to be putting infrastructure, but parking lots aren't always tied up to the grid. So like one of the issues that we're having at Second Avenue is, you know, the transformer is all the way, and I've now learned what a transformer is, but transformer is located all the way at this 10th Street Bridge, and our fleet's all the way like a football field away. Figuring out where we're going to site things and running cables and running conduit and trenching, there's just a lot of, it varies from site to site, and it could be really complicated or it could be really easy, and it's really, complicated to figure out. It's time intensive to figure out which sites are going to be well primed for it. Brian, I don't know if you had anything else to add to that.
Just exactly what Rebecca said. I mean, the city, we're an older city, so a lot of our buildings are older too. So the electrical infrastructure that's already there, some of it needs upgraded and replaced. So just, trying to come up with all the resources and the people who know what they're doing and coordinating it all, it can be a little troublesome.
You guys are this kind of effort. I mean, in hearing this, just for kind of folks out there, like you're really at the vanguard of kind of this next generation of how we drive, right? And what we drive, and you could foresee that there wasn't gas stations around, when the horse and buggy was kind of losing favor, right, to the Model T and other vehicles. So, just like I think one of the original commercial gas stations was over in East Liberty, I think was one of the first stops. So Pittsburgh's kind of on the map right now because of this work. I mean, what are some things, let's talk a little bit about the future. I mean, both from an infrastructure side, Rebecca, but also from a vehicle side, Brandon, like what are you guys seeing in the next, kind of 1 to 3 years and maybe kind of 3 to 5 years out? Like what should folks kind of anticipate?
Should I start with the vehicles, Rebecca?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. We're going to continue to focus on these sedans because that's, right now the availability of vehicles, that's what's available. But we're really excited. I don't know if everybody's heard of Lordstown Motors.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. So they own the GM plant that was in Lordstown.
Up off the turnpike on your way to Youngstown.
Yeah. And they retooled it, and they are building the first all-electric pickup truck that will be available for mass production to fleets. And they are holding it to fleets only. So, I can't go buy a Lordstown truck for personal use, but I can buy them for the city. So we're, depending on funding next year, we are hoping to purchase 15 to 20 of those.
Wow.
And add those to our fleet. So we're really excited about that. 1 to 3 years, I'd say definitely focusing on those pickup trucks, more sedans, and hopefully by the end of that third year, maybe we'll be testing out an electric garbage truck. We'll see. It's a little ways away in terms of electric garbage trucks, but.
Now, with the pickups, like those are, we use a lot of F-150s, F-250s, right? Like the Ford pickup trucks, they're kind of a workhorse of the fleet, aren't they?
They are. We have a lot of that. We have a lot of those, a lot of pickup trucks in our fleet. A few hundred, I'd say. DPW, the majority of their work, it involves a some type of pickup truck, whether it has a dump bed on the back or a utility box on the back or whatever. The trucks are really versatile in the sense that you can put a lot of different things on the back of them, and they can be used for a lot of different operations. So an EV pickup is really going to change the game.
Definitely. Wow. And I remember you sending the video of the Ford pickup too, with the pulling the locomotive.
Yeah. If anybody had any doubts about the capability of an electric vehicle, they should really look at that YouTube video. That's directly from Ford. And that truck really did that. It really pulled a 100,000-pound train, and then, you know, they loaded the train full of F-150s, and it pulled it again. So, that was really cool, really interesting to see. And even, you know, even watching, I watched the launch of the Tesla Cybertruck when they were introducing it, and it even shows on there for its tow capacity, it has an infinity symbol. Because we know that straight torque to wheel with the electric motor, it's capable of towing just about anything. It's just what is the capability of the frame and whatnot, and the legality of pulling something with that size of vehicle. So
making it street legal, right?
Yeah. So electric vehicles are very capable. And I think as people start to see more and more on the road and test drive them and have more experience around them, I think we're going to see a lot more people, you know, interested in switching and converting to the EVs.
Awesome. And Rebecca, your thoughts, kind of 1 to 3 years, 5 years out?
So on the charging side, I mean, right now we're pretty hyper-focused on making sure that we have enough juice for our vehicles, our vehicle fleet. So we're kind of going between DC fast chargers. So that's a gas station type of model of charging. So it takes about 25 minutes to charge a sedan up to about 80% charge, a typical sedan, electric sedan. And then level two is that charge that goes overnight. So we're trying to strike the right balance to figure out, you know, which facilities are we going to be installing charging infrastructure at? Which vehicle, how many level twos do we need? How many DC fast chargers do we need? We probably don't need a level two for every single vehicle, which was kind of the thought, a few years ago, but as the technology changes, you know, our intentions kind of change. Mm-hmm. The other thing that, you know, we're looking to do too is, any infrastructure that we're installing, could we also, find some kind of public benefit? So we've been working a lot with the parking authority. Some of our fleet sleeps at the parking authority lots. So is there, you know, a way that we could install the infrastructure, have chargers for our fleet, but then also offer it to, the public for public charging options? Right now, we don't really have a whole lot of public charging options in the city. We have some in our garages. We have about 35 downtown. And then the third level of that is, the energy source switch. So just because we're switching over to electric doesn't mean that, you know, a lot of our intentions here are for air quality benefits, but also for, emissions reduction purposes. And if we're, you know, in our area, we don't necessarily have a clean grid. I guess in Pittsburgh, we do have about 70% nuclear, but could we switch to local renewable for our charging infrastructure? So could we also site, you know, a solar canopy like we're planning to do at Second Avenue in a future phase? But could we do that across the city so that we kind of have a holistic approach?
Awesome. Yeah, it's interesting, like from our work, you know, in sustainability, which is, you know, working with kind of all the different departments on these aspects, how integrated they are, right? You know, so a lot of it depends upon like our energy procurement contract, which where we just transitioned to 100% renewable energy credits this year. Mm-hmm. Understanding the facilities master plan and kind of, you know, what that schedule is, because then like to Brandon's point, like that hits on upgrading to electrical services and things of that nature. So you really have to think strategically.
Yep.
You know, a couple final questions here before we wrap up. Brandon, one of the things that I kind of hit on, my nephew is an aspiring gearhead, has a couple cars he's working on in his garage. And I was talking to him about the work that, you know, you guys are doing and just driving an electric vehicle. And he's like, you know, he kind of rebuffs me just like any, you know, 19, 20 year old kid would do. You've kind of run this arc of, you know, being in fleet for 15 plus years and kind of, you know, give you an affectionate term, a gearhead, right? And, you know, what's the cultural shift like behind this? Like for folks that, you know, have been a part of kind of the, you know, really kind of the grease and the lug nuts and kind of the, you know, the oil and all the, everything that goes into kind of maintaining a car to transition to kind of some of these new technologies. Is that difficult or is it exciting or a mixture of both?
I think it's a mixture of both. You know, it's difficult in terms of now we have to learn a new way of maintenance, a new way of thinking in terms of, you know, refueling the vehicles and, just everything. And then I think it's exciting in the sense that, you know, we're transitioning to something new, just like, you know, when we went from horse-drawn carriages to cars. I think it's just as exciting. Maybe not for everybody like it was then. I think there's that people are worried, you know, a lot of things that you hear are, well, where am I going to charge it? And it's so expensive to put a charger at home. And, you know, we don't have gas stations at home either, you know. And as the DC fast charging technology gets better, I mean, I think Tesla and ChargePoint both are launching new DC fast chargers soon that will be capable of charging a 240-mile battery in 15 minutes. So, I mean, a gas station stop is usually about 10 to 15 minutes, right? You know, you pump your gas, you go in, maybe get a coffee, you know, a soda. So it's that simple. And, you know, I think it's exciting. I think I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, what else comes out here soon.
Awesome. Awesome. That's cool to hear. So just to wrap up, we have a kind of the final segment here. We always kind of asked our guests, Rebecca and I check in a little bit. We like to see what folks are listening to, watching or reading. Is there anything kind of interesting out there, maybe Rebecca, that you've consumed in the last week, or Brandon, that you want to share with folks?
I should prepare for this. I know it's coming.
You should have a running list by now. Like,
yeah, that wouldn't have been fair though, because I didn't know about that question, so I wouldn't have been able to prepare.
Yeah, this is just the off the cuff, like what are things that you guys are kind of, you know, listening to, reading or watching that are, you know, just kind of, you know, front and center for you right now?
I mean, on a totally different topic, I watched this crazy documentary last night about Cambridge Analytica and what it was about. I don't think I really understood the depth of what was going on. I think it's on Netflix, but it's, that was really enlightening.
What's the title?
I'm not sure. I think it had Cambridge Analytica in the title. You know, that algorithm just keeps feeding me what I want.
It's just going to keep coming back, right?
But it was good. It was really interesting. It was about the woman who was the whistleblower, I guess. Yeah, it was good. That's scary.
Pretty cool. Brandon, how about you?
I guess my topic's kind of actually related, just because I've been kind of tasked with trying to find some alternative garbage truck models and makes and models. So I've been doing a lot of research on garbage trucks. So it's really interesting to see the different companies. Europe is so far ahead of us right now in terms of technology and EV vehicles. But really interesting to see the couple electric vehicles that are now being used in Europe to pick up waste. It's really cool.
Interesting. That's some cool stuff. We'll have to pass it along. So
what about you?
I just started the fifth season of Revisionist History with Malcolm Gladwell, his podcast. And the first two episodes, he is drawing kind of the connection between museums and hoarding, and which is pretty fascinating stuff. And actually, just a quick plug, the Warhol Museum over on the north side makes a cameo appearance in the first episode. So Pittsburgh is prominently positioned in the first season, or excuse me, the fifth season of Gladwell's podcast there. So highly recommend it. It's a mind bender. Like you're kind of walking along and you're like, oh yeah, and then you're like, what? So he does a really good job of kind of tying the narration together. So it's pretty cool. So that's on my listening list. Nice. Awesome. Well, I'll tell you what, Pittsburgh's electric version of Click and Clack, we really appreciate you guys and the work that you're doing. We're going to send this demo tape to the guys at the real Click and Clack at NPR and see if we can get you a segment on there. David Feiner at the Cable Bureau has an in, so we'll see if we can send the audition tape there and maybe get you guys to go national. So, well, thanks so much. Brandon, we appreciate your time. Rebecca, I'll see you in the next Zoom call, probably sooner rather than later. Thank you all for listening in. We really appreciate it. Thanks to David and Bill and the whole Cable team for their production efforts here. Much appreciated, and listen in next time. This is the Grant Street Experience. I'm your host, Grant Irvin. Thank you so much, and we will be talking with you soon. Take care.